Hello, welcome, good evening to all. This is ABW Radio. Please do not adjust your sets. This is the AWOL pirate here, commanding his good ship, turbulent through the seas of love. That was an intro if ever there was one. Yes, indeed, I am your host, Chris. Nice to be back in the hot seat, and thank you all for joining us. Thank you to Danny, as usual, for doing the Tweety Poos. Thank you, Danny. I shall introduce my guests without any messing around. First of all, it's the fellow hipster, all-round good guy, Mr. Josh Dawe. Hello, Josh.
Evening, Chris. Hope you had a good Christmas.
It's all good, my friend. It's all good. It's all done. Back to work. No rest for the wicked. But hey ho, we're here. And the other part of my hipsters, the absent hipster, I shall call him. It's the man, the silver fox himself. It's Mr. Shitbeard. Hello, John.
Hello. Sorry, you just caught me cleaning my glasses so I could actually see what's going on. Yeah,
As
how
long
are
as
you,
it's
mate?
just your glasses you're cleaning, mate, that's all. Because bear in mind, this is on video, and Kelly will get awfully excited if you clean anything else.
That is true. She's at work as well. She'll get in trouble for that. So, hello and Happy New Year, everyone, as well.
Yes, and same to you both and all the ABW crew. Quick shout out to the people in the old chat box there. Corey. Hello, Corey. Hope you're well, sir. Nice to see you again. Ryan Rundle, Pablo Amar. It's almost Pablo Imar. That would have been something, wouldn't it? Goonshy, Jim Howson, regular. Mr. Shredder, Colonial Cannon is there. Kelly Maher, as usual. All the regular crew there. Usama Zaki, lots of people. Anyway, good evening to you all. I'm sure we'll come back to a few more of you as the episode goes on. So, Arsenal 2, Chelsea 2. Let's get some initial thoughts then. John, kick us off. Are you a little bit sort of what could have been, or are you quite happy overall given the balance of play and the fact we got a very late equaliser?
It feels tough to take because we had so many chances in the game that I thought we could have done better with. But then if you look how many times Morata in particular was basically one-on-one with Cech and decided I'm gonna outskill Lukaku here in front of goal, and just managed to put it wide or over the bar or whatever, or straight down Cech's throat, then I guess 2-2 is a fair result. I thought both teams went for it. I was a bit surprised that our starting lineup the way we shaped up, but it worked and it was the right decision in the end. Maybe we edged it a little bit, overall, I think it was a fair result. And I think both teams did enough to deserve something out of the game. I know some people have a problem with the penalty. We'll get onto later, obviously, but there was plenty of chances for both teams. And it just shows that if you're either your goalkeeper's good enough to keep you in a game, or you're not got enough conviction in front of goal, then that's the difference between getting 3 points and, really pressuring at the top end of the table or fighting for fourth and third, maybe, as we look like we're going to be doing, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully so. We'll come on to the goalkeepers. I thought both were outstanding this evening. Josh, what was your sort of overall thoughts? I mean, same question as John, really. I mean, are you sort of sat there kind of letting the tummy go out and go, that was a bit of a relief? Or are you sat there going, could have kicked on at 1-0? Because we had them on the ropes until they got their fortunate equaliser at the time.
Yeah, I mean, when I did my prediction prior to the game, like we normally do, I had it down as a score draw. I thought, though, in the first half and early second half, that we really should have been winning this game. I think we could have taken it through, but I think at the point of where we took real ascendancy and got the goal, we were denied by a, or at least had the wind taken from our sails by what you could call a controversial decision. But overall, getting a draw right near the end, I think we were fully deserving of points from this game, full stop, basically.
Yeah, it's one of those. It's one of those where you don't really know how to feel. Be interested to see what the chat box thinks. Chuck your thoughts in there, and whilst you're at it, if you really like us, or even if you don't, stick a little thumbs up in the box. We appreciate that, and it helps us get to a wider Arsenal community. It's almost like I do this for a living, isn't it? Let's move on to just briefly the lineup. John, we won't cover this too much depth because, let's be honest, the lineup we picked was pretty much what we've got left. But Ainsley Maitland-Niles coming in for Kolasinac at fullback. Should say we stuck to the back three. And the only other change, Mesut Ozil coming in for Alex Iwobi, which I'm sure made Steve a happy man. What was your thoughts? Of course, Rob Holding, sorry, also coming in for Lauren Koscielny, yeah, who's banjaxed again at the moment. Thoughts on that? Any surprises? Anything you'd have done differently?
The only surprise for me was the shape itself. I thought we might have played the back four because we're at home and Arsenal's record against Chelsea with Conte's manager is actually quite good, weirdly. I always get nervous before a Chelsea game, but since he's been there, we've done pretty well against them. I just thought, because of the way Chelsea are now lining up, they're not playing 3-4-3 anymore. They're playing with two up top and three in midfield. And we all know how good Fabregas is on the ball, that if he's got protection from Bakayoko and Kante, then maybe we need an extra man in the middle to hassle. But so the way we originally, the team was sort of put out and displayed to us, I thought, oh, we've gone 3-4-3. But Mesut actually ended up dropping and being deeper, as we've seen him in a couple of games. And we did have a three-man midfield. And we ended up overrunning them at times in the middle, which really did surprise me. I thought it'd be a fairly even battle, but I thought we won that for the majority of the game. So that was the only thing going into it I was a little bit worried about. But as soon as I saw Mesut sat in the middle, and he was definitely on it today, my sort of any fears I had were quelled a little bit. I was a little bit nervous about Chambers and Bellerin next to each other again, because a few times they've done that this season, they've been a little bit exposed. Bellerin hasn't been in the best of form, and Chambers, although I do think he's very good, it's against certain types of players, and he needs help when he's against pacey players. And when you've got Marcus Alonso and you've got Hazard, obviously he's got the freedom to roam wherever he wants. He was going to be tested for pace. And he showed his nerves a little bit tonight. But yeah, it wasn't really a surprise because, like you said, you haven't got anyone else we can play, to be honest.
Mm. Yeah, until the end of the January transfer window, where we all know we'll be signing seven players at least. Moving swiftly on, Josh. Just sort of, again, on the lineup as a whole, that back three, five, whatever you want to call it, any concerns? I mean, we saw Callum Chambers and Rob Holding, that, you know, probably the future of the club, if all goes according to plan, both still quite young, still both fairly inexperienced as, in terms of top level games, top level club performances and appearances. There was a few wobbles early on, but when you saw that lineup, particularly with Ainsley Maitland-Niles in it as well, who we all know is not sort of a definitive left back. Any concerns when you saw the run out on the pitch, and particularly after we'd had a few dicey moments in 20 minutes?
Yeah, I mean, with the two young guys that were flanked by, were flanking Mustafi, I thought that was potentially where we'd see some issues lie. But like I said prior to the match, I wasn't that worried overall, because I think there was more weakness in this Chelsea team than in ours. Ozil consistently has the running of Kante every game that we have come up against Kante, Leicester and Chelsea. Mesut Ozil has easily got the better of him, and we saw that in the first half. But yeah, I think with the defence, Callum Chambers certainly had a shaky first half. He wasn't helped by the balls back from Bellerin that were going to his left foot consistently. And for any player who knows, if people keep playing the pass to your wrong foot, it just makes it that look harder to get the ball out of your foot and continue the passing. And I think after a while he did end up getting back into the game, but then I think conversely Rob Holding towards the end of the game started to struggle. I think he was getting overrun. They started changing tack, Chelsea, of which defender they were targeting, especially with Alonso wasn't getting a lot of joy from Bellerin, and they started doubling up on Maitland-Niles to make sure that they could get past him, because he was having a fantastic game. I almost would be worried for Kolasinac trying to get back into the squad, to be honest, because, you know, the guy says he won't play left back, but he prefer not to play left back. With the form that Maitland-Niles is in at the moment, then perhaps we'll have to see Kolasinac coming into that left centre back position where Holding was playing. But I think overall, the guys that came in not fresh, or at least not match fit, they did a great job against Chelsea, who always do tend to cause problems.
Yeah, I agree. I think you both make some excellent points, and we'll touch on Maitland-Niles in a bit because he's someone I do want to talk a little bit about. But we'll kind of focus on the match a little bit, or some of the key incidents. John, first half overall, wouldn't say it was a non-affair because it was a very entertaining game if you take off both Arsenal and Chelsea glasses for a minute, if you just look at it in isolation. Yeah. But it wasn't. There was a few incidents, a few sort of close run things in the first half, a couple of chances that fell our way. Disappointed to come in at the break 1-0 and 0-0. And did you sort of feel that we could have laid down a marker? Because it looked like we were just that little bit tentative despite a good start.
Yeah, well, we had Alexis had the chance that caught our pay. That was first half, wasn't it, where he palmed it onto the post and rolled across along the line, hit the other post, and then came out. And, you know, he caught up, reacted quick enough, and got to it, which was
stunning save, by the way, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, to be fair, I mean, he doesn't know it's going to go onto the post and roll along. That's beside the point. He gets a hand to it, he does whatever a goalkeeper can, and gets a very strong hand to it. And just not really nice interplay as well. And the build up for that was, you know, any other day that goes in. Then you have Lacazette as well, had a really nice turn in the box. And I think it was the first time Ozil had a lot of the ball in the first half. He was getting a lot of touches, but he's either his final pass or he wasn't quite finding the room for it, I didn't think, in the first half. But he got that one ball in, which crossed the box for Lacazette, who did a beautiful turn and shot. And again, Courtois got down to it to save. But I was mixed going into the end of the first half because I thought, wow, we could have been, you know, one or two up. But then equally, you know, Morata was letting clear through Chambers and Mustafi got miscommunication. Then Chambers was expecting Cech to come out and call him out, and he didn't, and didn't track him, and he puts it well wide. And I think Bakayoko and Fabregas both had a chance as well in the first half, like quite good chance that they both squandered. So it was the way the game ran. I did feel we were slightly better overall, but just because we gave up so many chances through either some really good Chelsea play, which it was a few times, or you know, our own mistakes in defence, which were the more worrying ones. You couldn't have said, oh, well, if we took all ours and we were 2-0 up at half-time, it would have been fair, because, you know, if Chelsea take their chances, they probably could have been ahead, because I think they had more than we did in the first half, not in terms of their own brilliant play, but just in terms of our own mistakes. So, I was disappointed we didn't at least have a goal, I thought, and I was a little bit frustrated with the lack of ball getting to Lacazette in the box. I know it's tough for him tonight because he obviously playing against the back three, and then Chelsea dropped to a back five, and obviously very good defensively, and they blocked the lines well, but the ball wasn't getting through to him enough. And I thought that he looked a bit frustrated again, as he has done in the past few games, really, that he hasn't really received enough service, but it got better into the second half. But it was nuts. I think this is why, like, lots of people always criticise me for saying I don't think the Premier League's very good. This is the exception when you get games like this, you know, that it is end-to-end and it's entertaining and it's exciting. And as a neutral, this must have been brilliant tonight. I mean, I was about to ring Ellis up and say, like, nurse, can you get round here, please? And, you know, give me a resuscitation because my heart's about to fail in a minute. But it was just frustrating that we didn't take those chances.
I think, like you say, it's one of those where you look at it and you think, in isolation, and particularly the Alexis chance was probably the one that you look at and you go, oh, that was quite Lacazette, the low shot he got hold of, but ideally probably needed to lift it, but just sort of hit it low and Courtois made a good save. That said, I mean, we did get away with a few, didn't we? I think that Fabregas pass, which was unbelievable, by the way, to Bakayoko. It's a good job that he hasn't got his Monaco boots on at the moment because he's a shell of the player.
Yeah, that pass was absolutely ridiculous.
Oh, it's delicious, wasn't it? Yeah. I actually I don't want to. This is obviously an Arsenal podcast, so I don't want to touch too much. Everyone knows I have a lot of love for Fabregas, regardless of all of what's gone before. Actually, thought it was really classy for our fans to, in the main, applaud him off when he came off. I thought that was really, really classy. So,
the way he conducted himself tonight was really nice. The good, hug on Alexis, as well, when he went nuts after appealing for a penalty, which wasn't a penalty. The foul he'd committed on Cesc, and him giving a hug and everything and calming it down, because Alexis could have easily got himself booked then.
Yeah, he could have. Yeah, I thought he was going to hunt down his family at one point.
took it, took it, yeah, spirit. or the other side, Alexis, that it's, yeah, it is just a game, but I'm really passionate. I want to win everything. And he gave a little smile back to Cesc. So, yeah, it was good natured tonight. But, yeah, the big worry was the mistakes at the back. That was Chambers in particular didn't have the best of games tonight. But I don't think that's all on him. A lot of that is to do with the people around him not protecting him enough.
Yeah, completely agree. And I say, just credit where credit's due. Whatever you think of some former players who come back and pretty much disgrace themselves, I thought fair play. He's a player still who's still got it. Let's be honest, he'd walk into our midfield, whether you like him or not. Anywho, if you're not watching live, you get to miss out on Cat TV. There's Tommy, who's just arrived. So big hello to him. Josh, anything you particularly want to add to that first half performance? We've touched on the chances that sort of came and went. We've focused on the fact that Arsenal started the game pretty well. Anything that you want to cover that we haven't yet crossed on that first half?
No, I think just going back to reiterate the point of Mesut Ozil, how well he played, I think, through that first half. Just Chelsea weren't near him at all. I think if it was the first half where who plays that ball in? It was Alexis. We plays the 1-2. And that turn of pace from Ozil, you just forget how fast that guy actually is. He must be one of the fastest at the club.
He's elegant. He just flies,
absolutely
isn't he?
Storms in to the box. It's unlucky to not get it. But just watch apparently the league and world's greatest defensive midfielder not track that run from him as well.
Don't poke the bear, Josh.
Yeah, I'll poke all of that bears when it comes to a tiny little Frenchman.
He did make an absolutely disgusting tackle that should have led to a Chelsea goal on Ozil.
Yeah,
he did. He did at 45th minute, and that shut me up. But I think overall in the game, he didn't have a good one.
Yeah,
as we say, this is an Arsenal podcast. We'll talk about how great Mesut Ozil is. And I don't think he's playing for a new contract elsewhere and all of that bollocks. I think he's just playing good football.
Can I ask you, just while we're on that, because I know there wasn't a lot else to cover in the first half, on Mesut Ozil, I don't know if people agree, and, you know, from all the shit I get on various social medias, I am not an ITK. I just report things I know and things I hear from France. I know nothing about the inner workings of Arsenal other than what we're all told in groups. But he does look like a player to me who's very settled all of a sudden, a player who doesn't have the weight of the world on his shoulders, who doesn't appear to be a player who's got too many pressures in life and looks really comfortable. Is that something you concur with, Josh? Do you reckon there's... I mean, I've got this theory, that, and it is just a theory, that maybe he's agreed or even signed a new deal and the club are just sort of waiting for either the right or wrong time, i.e. when we lose at home to Spurs or something horrific, or the right time when we're on a good run of form to announce it. Because he does look like a player who's playing without, you know, he's playing with freedom and he's exhibiting that on the park. So do you buy into the fact that maybe something's going on behind the scenes that we don't know yet?
Yeah, I think off the field, it's now been fairly well documented by the weird stalker types on Twitter that, you know, he's getting married in the summer, has already bought a house in London and he's looking to, you know, settle down in that city. And I think personally that, yeah, he will stay with us. And what's making it an even nicer decision for us, because I think the biggest criticism I had of him before was the fact that we had to try and shoehorn a team around him, is that now with the way that we've seen him turn up for Germany earlier in the season and now coming for Arsenal, is sitting in a midfield three, which we didn't really think he could do, and he was more of a luxury number 10. People calling out, you know, the likes of Kevin De Bruyne and David Silva for what they've done in their game, for how they've managed to adapt and become more of a central midfielder, more well-rounded. I think we're seeing that now from Mesut Ozil. And the fact that we could now happily say move to a 4-3-3, which I think is the formation that almost all of us are really been calling out for recently, if we were going to move back to the back four and get the best out of the likes of Lacazette and the wingers we've got at the team, then we don't have to shoehorn Ozil out there on the wing. We can actually bring him inside. And I think we've got those midfield options now. And I'll happily be able to get him in there compared to an Alexis who, you know, at the moment doesn't look to fit into another system. But what do I know on Alexis? I'm, to be fair, a little bit biased on what he's like, to be honest, as a player and a person. But I wouldn't be too dissatisfied if both signed. I'd be sadder if Ozil left the club, because he is a wonderful footballer, and these last few months for showing how he could change his game and adapt to what's required is just icing on the cake for we've got that player who just looks to see what he needs to do in the team, and for the greater good has dropped away that luxury tag that he's been afforded for the last two seasons.
And what a difference in creativity tonight from Sunday. I know it's a different game, different opposition, different crowd, everything that goes with it. But what a difference a creator makes. And that's not a knock on Iwobi, but he's a different player and a better player, let's be honest.
Yeah, and I think the team that we played is certainly playing more open than the likes of a West Brom. Yeah. That, you know, Chelsea are just as much wanting to win this game as we are. Yeah. So they're both sides are attacking, which obviously leaves a lot more space for players to operate in. But as you say, I think in the 0-0 draw against Chelsea, we were unlucky that Mesut Ozil missed out on that game, because I think Iwobi actually had one of the better games that he's had this season, but he was just missing that world-class pass. And I think that's what we needed from when we got that, and we saw how those extra bits of quality managed to consistently get through that back line. And also how Alexis did a great job on Aspilicueta. I think that's throughout the whole game. That man-marking him and just leaving Lacazette with Christensen, who, what a centre-back he is, by the way. I know we would have seen a bit of him in Germany, but Cahill is certainly on his last legs. And to see Lacazette get a bit more freedom to push at two centre-backs, and Lacazette just to sit on Aspilicueta and completely nullify that combination that they've had huge success with this season between him and Morata, I think was a wonderful piece of tactical astuteness from Arsene Wenger, who doesn't always get a lot of praise when a bit of tactics is done.
We all know he doesn't do tactics. I joke. But yeah, no, credit where credit's due. You know, maybe he doesn't do it enough against some of the weaker oppositions. That would be an argument that's worth bringing up for another time. But he got it spot on tonight, and all power to him. We maybe will touch on Mesut a little bit more later on, because I've got another theory that if we get time, I will share. But until then, John, let's get on to that second half, because lots went on. Arsenal hit the front through Jack Wilshere, who... There's a bit of a division in ABW. There's a bit of a division in our groups, and I think across social media in general and Arsenal fans in general. And that kind of division is where we see Jack Wilshere. He's clearly playing back to the level that we remember. Excuse me. He's clearly playing to a level that suggests that he does want to stay at the club. I mean, he got a lot of stick, didn't he, pre-season about changing his Twitter page to not having anything Arsenal related and all that. Maybe because even in his own head, players are human. I think maybe even he thought he won't get the dream back to play for Arsenal again. Posted on Instagram the other night, said, you know, he's delighted to be back. He's always had the club in his heart, and he wants to stay. Probably via a pay cut, we'd imagine. But that goal tonight and the subsequent celebration, first of all, what a finish. But that is the Jack Wilshere that if we can get that, even 20 games a season, that's a Jack Wilshere we've got to be looking to sign on, surely.
Yeah, everyone said like his ability and his technique and all those kind of things have never been in doubt. It's whether he can stay fit, and then on top of that, can he play in a slightly changed role from what we saw him when he was, 17 or something, in a different midfield. And he's done, is that five games now?
90 minutes? Five in a row, yeah. Yep.
Which is the first time in probably like 3 or 4 years, something ridiculous like that, for Arsenal anyway. So I think he's showing that. I said before the game tonight, I said, you know, is anyone worried that maybe Jack's going to be running to the ground a little bit because of our lack of options in midfield? And obviously he was always going to start tonight because, you know, Elneny is, you know, as nice as a squad player he is, he's not got someone you're going to bring in for a Chelsea game that you want to try and win. And I was getting a bit nervous that maybe he's going to, Arsene's going to overuse him because he's got so much faith in him, and it'll wear him out again, and then maybe he picks up an injury. But that doesn't look like happening. He's riding tackles well. He's kicking other players. He went straight in for Fabregas as soon as he could to get a yellow card, which I thought was funny. Seska then subsequently getting booked for not fouling Jack, but the ref got it completely wrong, was also even more funny. but yeah, he was really good tonight. The goal was brilliant. And the thing that I liked most about the goal, because up until that point, Ozil had got through twice and he'd, like, Courtois made a good save. It was a good save, not a brilliant save. And Ozil, I just think, just didn't hit it very well. And then another time where he squared it looking for Alexis, and I was just screaming, just hit the ball. Just hit it in the roof of the net. Courtois, you've waited. Courtois has gone down on the ground. And you can dink it, you can hit it with your right foot, anything. And he didn't do it. Jack, as soon as he got in the box, there was just no thought about it. He was like, I'm just going to hit this ball as hard as I can, straight into the top corner. And it's the frustration that Arsenal fans have had for 10 plus years. Which is why everyone liked Rizicky so much. Because you knew if you got the ball, he was just going to hit it. It's why everyone sort of jumped on Kolasinac very quickly as well, because he had exactly the same thing, that get the ball in the box, I can see the goal, I'm just going to hit the ball as hard as I can. And sometimes you just got to do that, because you might get a deflection, you might get a bit of luck. But with whereas with Jack, he's got the skill and the technique to do that. And his celebration was great. And there's no doubt that, you know, I don't doubt the other players at the club love Arsenal and everything and have got great admiration for it and the fans and everything else. But Jack is a proper Arsenal boy. He's been there for so long. And he's the, Cole Jenkinson was like the fans' version of a footballer. If we got to play football professionally, it would be great. But, you know, we're not good enough. Jack is everything you want. He's proper Roy of the Rovers type thing. So I really hope he does get a new contract. I hope he stays. Is he going to be a captain or anything like that? I don't know. The other good thing I would say is actually he seems a lot more mature on the pitch. You see, like tonight, a couple of times he was really frustrated with fouls that weren't given against him, whether he was right or wrong about them. But he'd have a go at the ref, but then he'd stop. He didn't carry on and on and on and on to the point where he was going to get a booking or where he was going to get a second yellow and get sent off. So he seems to have become a little bit more level-headed. And maybe that's the whole settling down thing, young family, having another one on the way and everything like that. So,
read my mind, yeah.
Yeah, that maybe has kicked into it a bit. And maybe just because of the time away from the club and being at Bournemouth and going, taking a look at himself and going,
perspective, yeah.
I really do want to make it. I know I'm good enough. It didn't do a lot for him, the Bournemouth move, I think, other than it was that kind of year of just getting fitness. In terms of, like, improving as a player, I don't think it did, but maybe he improved as a man, kind of thing, off the pitch was the big thing. Being away from London for a year helped him. So yeah, I was really made up for him, and I thought at that point, this is it now, we'll do, you know, because as soon as we scored the goal, we were really all over Chelsea and they were rattled, and we've done the thing that we've done in a lot of games this season where for the next 5-10 minutes we really had all the ball and all the pressure and we looked like we were going to score again, but just sadly didn't come through. But yeah, really made up for Jack for that goal.
Absolutely. I have a warning to hand out. Chanzarakin, behave yourself or you will feel the Welsh hammer of justice. So keep it clean. Thank you. No, excellent points, John, I thought. And again, credit where due. Jack, fantastic finish. It was, the Gary Neville said in commentary, it was the only place he could put it over a goalkeeper like that. And he caught it sweet. It reminded me a little bit of Podolski's against... Montpellier, obviously different type of strike, yeah. But the ferocity over the goalkeeper, for a goalkeeper of that height to hit it that
low. It was that kind of game though, where it was just screaming for someone when the ball was running on, so it just hit the ball as hard as it can. Like you weren't ever going to place it past Courtois or anything else. That's why when in the first half, when Cesc got the little back heel from Hazard, I thought, oh no, it's a goal. Because it was just the way it's laid up and set up, you're just going to have to, both goalkeepers tonight were really, really good. And you thought, oh, they're just going to have to rifle it in to get a goal.
See, I thought that goal reminded me of Nasri, the one where he slipped and put it in the top corner. That's what it was, because I'm sure Jack Wilshere slips when he hits that, and that's why it spins into the top corner. Like, not taking it away, you know, technique and all that, but
yeah,
he does certainly slip to hit it. But yeah, it's one of those that it was crazy. It was what was needed, because I think I was just screaming through that first half that Courtois is just too tall. I think it should be, you know, we need a height limit in for goalkeepers, because Ozil couldn't lob him.
No, like a sign at the fair or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Up at the Emirates, if you are this tall, you're not allowed to be a goalkeeper.
You're not allowed to, yeah.
Also, if you've had a really mediocre career, you cannot be a goalkeeper at the Emirates, because this will be the one game that makes your career.
Yeah, that's so true. I actually thought on Courtois as well, that was quite a nice touch. At the end, I don't know if you saw, there's a kid in the crowd with a sort of cardboard sign saying, oh, Courtois, yeah, please can I have your shirt. Yeah, I thought it was quite nice because, you know, I know it's a Chelsea player, but you don't see that a lot. Do you see players like lobbing it into the crowd? But you don't sort of often see. Peter Cech did it, of course, last weekend. And it's nice when players take the time to make kids' evening. So well done to him. Josh, on the we'll launch into penalty debate then. So we're 1-0 up at that stage. We could have gone 2-0 up. We have to say there was a chance almost straight after the goal. And I think at 2-0, I think we could have gone on to kill the game off, or maybe do. Was it 3 goals we got against Chelsea in a few minutes last time we played them at home? But alas, we did the Arsenal thing of chucking away a lead. We've got differing opinions here, haven't we, on this? We'll be respectful, but John's going to cause or sort of man the barricades in terms of saying it was a penalty. Josh, did you feel it was? I will hold my hands up. I will say I can see why it's given. My issue, like our good friend Lord Hill Woods, is the fact that Hazard cheats to win that penalty in his reaction. Not the contact. There is contact. Can't deny that. But as you quite rightly pointed out, Josh, there can be contact in the box and it not be a foul. So did you feel it was not?
Yeah, I didn't think that was a foul for me. We'll let John be wrong on this when he debates it in a bit. but yeah, I don't think it was a foul for the reason, one, Hazard's not in control of the ball when that happens.
Great point.
Secondly, yeah. He's not one to, you know, he certainly exaggerates the contact. Yes, there is contact there. But again, is that enough contact to be a foul? No, contact happens in the box all the time. Look at a corner going in, for God's sake. Just look how much contact is going on there. Pulling a shirt. Oh yeah, that's meant to be a foul. And so that we've seen them slightly given. It's such a harsh penalty. So harsh.
You watch a lot of Championship football with our good pal Ross. Yeah. I know it's a different level, but how much, like you make the point there about contact at corners. How many teams do you see, particularly in the Championship, Leagues 1 and 2, where there's less cameras, less spotlight maybe, pushing, shirt pulling? I mean, even clubs like, sort of, I don't want to label clubs like Burnley, a little bit up and at them. There's so much goes on. You look at like the Leeds defender, Pontus Janssen, watching against Nottingham Forest, you know, constantly. And at that level, it seems to go unpunished. And yet the tiniest flick, is it because the players like Hazard are too, you know, clever and too intricate and tricky and delicate and how they play the game almost and earn penalties? Is that what we saw?
Well, yeah, I think on Janssen, he was trained in Italy. That tells you everything you need to know about what he does in the box. But otherwise, I think we saw it with Jack Wilshere earlier in the game, who tries to draw a foul out of, who was it? Was it back? Christensen,
yeah.
Yeah, early in the second half, where, you know, everyone's going, oh, that's a dive, he should be off. Because that's just before he scores the goal, if I remember rightly. Because arguably he shouldn't be on the pitch when he puts that in, if that's truly a dive, which, you know, we've seen given left, right and centre. I think what also irks me is the fact that there isn't that consistency across the game as a whole. That Anthony Taylor had a superb first half, I thought, other than as soon as that Fabregas yellow card came out, you're like, right, okay, that's his first bad decision he's made this game. Is that going to be his only one or not? But I think it was, you know, he kind of lost the game from that point. And pundits going, oh, he's got a great angle of it. And that's not enough contact, personally, for him to go down. It's a 50-50 ball situation. I think anywhere else on the field, that's not given. You know, it's all the cliches for why that's not a penalty. But fundamentally, Hazard does not have control of the ball at that time. And we've seen plenty of penalties not given for us this season, because of the fact that our striker or forward player does not have control of the ball when they're tackled.
Yeah, I can. I definitely. I mean, again, I'll be unbiased. I'll leave this one up to you guys to fight it out. I am the host and nothing more. Just before I get your views, John, really interesting post-match comments from Arsene Wenger related to penalty, breakaway, etc. Have you seen this? That our good friend Simon Collings, Chief Fanny, has presented to us. One of the maddest Wenger press conferences I've seen in a while ended with him saying he would have gone home to commit suicide had Zappacosta scored at the end. You're not alone, Arsene. Wenger also said he's 100% contesting the FA charge, described Bellerin penalty as farcical, and said he knew before the match it would happen. Did he mean Bellerin? Or was he talking about the Burnley, the West Brom? Did he mean Chambers?
I think he means, I'm assuming Chambers. In reference to the penalty in the Chelsea game.
Oh, really?
I mean, that's how it reads to me. I don't know. We'd have to ask Simon.
Oh, of course. Sorry, because it was Bellerin who committed the... I'm losing my marbles.
That's how it reads to me, but I'd obviously have to see the press conference, so I'd have to wait till the full press is out, yeah.
Yeah, well, if you want to watch that... If you want to watch that at @SR_Collings, little shout out for our friend Simon there. He'll be tweeting that when it's available. So
he's journalist. He's a real one.
He is. He's unlike us mugs. He's an actual professional. We just sit here and talk bollocks. Speaking of talking bollocks, right, John, penalty. So you know me. We banter back and forth on a regular occasion. Sometimes we agree, sometimes we disagree. As I said to Josh, I can definitely see your point. All right. If there is contact, some would say blatant penalty. My issue obviously is with the exaggeration of the fall and the fact that there can be contact when a player is, you know, not necessarily clips him. Hazard goes down holding his shin when he's clearly kicked to the bottom of the boot. But in your opinion, you know, for you, you've got no complaints with the penalty at all.
I mean, it's a penalty. The complaint I have is the way Hazard rolls around and grabs his shin and, you know, all that nonsense. That's, you don't need that. He's done that because if he does that, then he hopes he's going to highlight the fact that he has been kicked. People say, oh, okay, well, it wasn't that hard that he got kicked or whatever. He kicked the underside of his boot. Now, we all played football. We know how painful that is, for one. That does actually hurt. The boots now are, like, I assume the ones they have are even, like, they're probably not even there, like paper. Does he need to roll around like that and grab his shin? No. Does he have to exaggerate the way he falls over? No, of course not. That's annoying. But then you're going into the territory of a referee has to interpret whether someone has been fouled, but then also whether someone has then exaggerated the foul to try and gain an advantage from it, which, like, isn't even in the rules. I have no idea how you'd adjudicate for that. Because, again, that's even more in the grey area of, well, this one person thinks that he's overdone it and this one doesn't. At the end of the day, he's kicked the player and not the ball. I know Josh said we'd all be moaning if he didn't go for the challenge. I do agree to some extent if it then led to a goal. Yes, I probably would have gone, no, why has he not gone for the ball, being an idiot? Because I'm not a football manager. But if you watch it back, he doesn't need to kick the ball. He doesn't need to stick his leg out there. That's such a stupid decision for a defender to make against a player who, I'm sure, you know, from Arsene's press conference, it sounds like he probably told the players, don't, you know, stick a leg out anywhere near Eden Hazard. He's going to dive. And the players will know that themselves. Yeah. But he doesn't need to make the challenge. Hazard's back is to goal. The ball's, it's not like it's high up in the air and you're going for a header. It's totally different. It's at a weird height where fouls do happen. Someone might dip their head to try and put it on someone's boot to try and claim they've been kicked in the face. You know what I mean? So I just don't think he needs to make the challenge there. Yeah, it might be a little bit soft, but don't make the challenge and he kicked the player. So for me, if that happened against us, I'd be screaming for a penalty, whether our player dived about or not. No, I would be absolutely screaming for a penalty. It's just a stupid defensive decision for me. And it's the one thing that I take away from the game that really annoys me. And Noma put a really good point in the chat, as she always does. We're so Jekyll and Hyde, home and away, like our form. She said brilliantly, she said, away from home, we look like a bottom six team, like the way we play, which is not good at all. At home, we're great going forwards, but defensively, either as a unit or individual errors that we make, it's so bad. And they're so consistent, just keep on happening over and over again. And it's really disappointing because when you see how well we were playing today and the midfield was really good and, you know, we out-battled Bakayoko, Kante and Fabregas today in midfield. And one of our midfielders was Mesut Ozil. That's ridiculous. That doesn't happen. You know, Alexis was really good today as well. We had both of our star players really performing. Lacazette was great. And we were so good for going forwards. And were it not for some poor shots and a very good goalkeeper, we would have, you know, scored a load more goals today as well. Maybe we could have won it. So the frustration I have with today's game is individual defensive errors and some collective ones as well, where we just, you know, just little things. Like there was one where like they had a throw in and Bellerin just, and I'm not trying to pick on Bellerin because he you know, he's going to be dug out, not by Arsenal fans for the penalty, but for other things he's done this season. He just switched off for a minute and Fabregas just walked past him and just got a throw in, got to the byline and won a corner. You know, just little things like that. And you just think, you just like tighten up all those things, like 10, 15% more. We do so much better. And I thought, you know, those little things equate into points over a season that bumps you from fifth up to, you know, maybe second, something like that. So that's what really annoyed me about it. But yeah, for me, it's penalty. I can see why people would say no. And that's fair enough. But that's the whole thing with football. This is why I said on the last show that I don't think VAR will really make that much a difference.
No, that's something that will probably, I think VAR is something that Danny's in the chat.
There was a very interesting thing, just quickly on that. I had the commentary from NBC with Lee Dixon on. I was watching that stream and he was saying after each time he watched it, by about the sixth time he watched it, he said, oh, actually, you know what? I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure. Maybe it is a bit soft. So even if you've got VAR, they only watch it, what, 2-3 times? Mm. Or they have like a certain amount of time to watch it, watch the replays of it.
Yeah.
So maybe if you gave a referee 30 seconds to watch that, they'll go, yeah, no, it's a penalty. He's kicked him. But then if you get to him an hour after the game and he's watched it 10 more times, he might have changed his opinion and gone, you know what, maybe it is a little bit soft. He shouldn't have given it. So you're still gonna get decisions that people won't agree with, regardless of that.
With the same thing said on Sky as well, with Martin Tyler and Gary Neville saying exactly the same thing, that, you know, there's still interpretation in that exact moment. Some of them are more black and white.
Yeah, but I always try to take, it's very difficult because we get replays so quickly now if you're watching the game, but I always try to take my first opinion on it. And when I saw it live at full speed, I thought, my instant reaction was, twat, that's a penalty.
And mine was dive. It must have been
I think because of the player.
Yeah.
If that was a different Chelsea player or, you know, different team, you might have gone, oh no, why has he done that? Again, you get those preconceived ideas in your head, don't you?
It's probably the over-exaggeration. I'm a pessimist
when it comes to our defence.
No, I agree. It's the over-exaggeration. I thought Steve made an excellent point in our chat. Christ, Steve's getting more mentions than me tonight. I need to change this. But no, he made an excellent point in one of his many audios this evening in our WhatsApp group, which is a thing of absolute beauty, by the way, boys and girls. You don't know what you're missing. Private. Available for $9.99 a month. All checks payable, Jay Welsh. But it's he made a very good point in that
that's my premium Snapchat, Chris.
Oh, is it? Oh, well, no, nobody needs to see that, John.
No. I've got no subscribers, weirdly. I don't know why.
No, Josh has got an OnlyFans account. If Steve's point was, he was talking about Sean Dyche, who's, you know, he divides opinion. Sean Dyche, obviously, he's done a very good job. But he made the point that Sean Dyche made after the, was it the Spurs game? I think he came out and said this, or no, it was the Huddersfield penalty, wasn't it? And he said, my player has tried to stay on his feet and has not exaggerated the contact and therefore has not got a penalty. So I suppose the argument is for Hazard or whatever player it is, if the shoe's on the other foot, do we want our players to be going down in that situation? Because if you don't over-exaggerate the contact, however many people like, you know, you and us, or us two and or us three are talking about from home, if you're not exaggerating the contact, arguably you don't get the penalty. And I do think referees are inhuman. It's human nature. If a player goes up in the air, you do think that happens. Now, Josh, John, you both played a game at a lower level, as have I, and managed it to a degree. You know that wouldn't happen on a Sunday league pitch because, the player involved will probably get the shit kicked out of him and carted off in an ambulance or shoved in the hedge of the next challenge.
Well, you've got to find a referee for the game first.
there is that. But at this level, Steve's point was absolutely bang on. You know, Sean Dyche is saying, well, how do we interpret this rule? If my, you know, do you want me to tell my players to go down? You know, should my players be encouraged to fall down? And on the same point of VAR, which, as I said earlier, I'm sure Danny and Gim can find a quiet international break to talk VAR. The biggest issue I worry about, particularly with it coming into the English game, is Italian referees, German referees tend to be, you know, they're not celebrity referees like Mike Dean. I worry that we might out English VAR, if you know what I mean. I wonder if we might try and be, well, we gave the game, you know, to the world. We can do it better than anyone else.
Oh, I do could worry. See it being full on like Britain's Got Talent, like the three people sat yeah. with buzzers on the sideline, a big X or whatever. Yeah,
that's the worry. We'll come back to that because we could go off on a tangent, but it's a good point, nevertheless.
Can I just say, for anyone who's not watching live or listening back to this later, after my Snapchat comment, people in the box were asking for Kelly Mars Snapchat.
Yeah, it's worth it.
No perverts on the internet, honestly.
God bless you, Kelly. Yes, let's move on. Simon Jordan's in the chat. I don't think it's the former Crystal Palace owner. If it
no,
is.
No, it's not. He's a regular.
Yeah, he is. Hi, Simon. Right, let's move on to the next goal. Okay, so Josh, so we get the leveler come up. It's, you know, it's a good penalty from Hazard. We know Chet doesn't do penalty saves. God bless you, Peter. But yeah, Chelsea are in front of, level. And at that stage, it was very much like a game that could have gone either way. Both sides, I think it affected Arsenal's momentum, clearly. Chelsea had a few opportunities. There was a few breakaways. And then came what we thought could have been the killer goal. Marcus Alonso continues to impress me every time I see him play. Delicious cross from Willian, has to be said, as he came on for Hazard. And Marcus Alonso diverting the pace of the ball. And at that stage, with what, 8 minutes to go, I think we all sort of sat there and went, oh, this is so quintessentially Arsenal. A game that we've been largely on top for and we've conceded a killer goal. Thoughts on the goal? So you had a bit of an issue with some of the communication, I think, as that cross came in.
Yeah. As you say, the ball from Willian comes out to Zappa Costa, and well, I say Maitland-Niles is kind of holding him up, and you know that was a really, really good duel that I had after Moses was quietly taken out of stage left for Zappa Costa to come on. I think overall they had a really, really interesting battle because I think Maitland-Niles had the better of Moses, but yeah, when it came to Zappa Costa, I think he just managed to get it in there. And I think the problem is where Alonso's come from. He goes past two of our midfield because you can't, well, to be honest, from it, you can't see where Xhaka and Wilshere are looking. You would hope that they're looking towards Alonso and can track that run. You've then got Callum Chambers and Bellerin, which is the direction from which he's come in. You've got Mustafi, who's looking at Morata, which he should be doing, and Holding is then just facing out in his correct position. There's kind of a couple of issues that occur once the ball starts coming in. Once the ball's in, you would if Holding knew of the danger behind him, which I think, as you say, as any centre back, for me, I'm going to the ground. I'm going to ground there, and I'm trying to clear that, hoping for the best. I don't put it in the bottom corner in an own goal, but that's more of my footballing skills rather than Rob Holding's that be able to do that. So he should be able to clear it. Perhaps it's the fact that he's technically right-footed and prefers to slide on his kind of left-hand side, if you know what I mean.
There's yeah.
certain players that, you know, they slide better on a certain side. I'm certainly better because I'm left-footed, you know, leaning down to my right and using my left foot as the dominant foot. But I think that perhaps is one issue of why he doesn't go down. And then you've got the issue of Alonso coming in. And I think even at, you know, the level that any of us have played at, and Chris is managing people, always you've got a shout when your man's gone off you to, you know, hand him over. At the very least, you know, Hector Bellerin should be handing Alonso over to Chambers, and it should be Chambers that's dealing with that run coming in. Yeah. And from there, I think that's the real problem, that it's those two at the fault there. And I think Holding comes out of it the best out of all of them, because of the fact he's blissfully unaware that Alonso's made a great run and cut across the two centre-backs that are behind him. But
it's a quality finish, isn't it? Whatever way
you look at it, it's a quality finish. And there's nothing that Cech can really do about it, because Cech would be expecting either the first man, well, the ball not to beat the first man. And then after that, you know, it's whatever happens, he's got hope he's in the right place, because he's not really going to be saving that with reflexes. It's from that close, it's going to be more luck rather than judgment. But
yeah,
from there, I'm kind of, yeah, I'm just annoyed how we don't seem to be able to hand men over across a back four. Whether or not we're looking at Oh, I don't know. Maybe we're doing something zonally, but I haven't really looked into it enough because we keep chopping and changing the back three. You can't really see the consistency of what we're trying to achieve because the tactic seems to differ depending on that personnel that's in there.
Mm. Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think there are defensive issues, full stop. Also, I could just put full stop there. But yeah, I do think that maybe, I think AZ Maitland-Niles' lack of experience, maybe stopping the cross could be pointed at as well. It was just it is a very good goal, on credit where credit's due, sort of grudgingly with Chelsea. But it's just switching off at that point of the game. That's sort of the concern. And we have to remember as well, at that point, I think the back three had turned into a four, holding in Chambers and AZ Maitland-Niles not playing as a unit before. Many contributing factors, but yeah, I certainly take your point. Actually, were we at back four at that point?
No, because Walcott hadn't come on.
Of course. Sorry, yeah, I take that back.
The one thing with that goal, and I agree with Josh, you know, Alonso obviously comes from that side of the pitch and he should be passed over, but there was only Morata in the box.
That's true. Yeah,
And he's basically in between Callum Chambers and Mustafi. So he can see the back of Mustafi's shirt. So in theory, Callum Chambers has got Morata. Is the way you're supposed to do it, because as a defender, you're not supposed to let the attacker see the back of your shirt. So again, it's still communication, but Mustafi doesn't go across. Maitland-Niles, I think it was his one, possibly his only mistake, I think he made it, like, defensively at left wing back tonight. I thought he was superb, you know, playing against a very experienced player in Victor Moses and Zappacosta. It was the only time he let him go free. So I can't give him too much stick. Yeah, like no one at the near post clearing it. Mustafi just completely caught unaware. You know, Alonso just runs straight in front of him. Mustafi doesn't even know he's coming. So whether it's he hasn't reacted quick enough or no one's spoken to him. Him and Chambers seemed a couple of times, the first time Morata got in, him and Chambers were having a discussion about where one player should be, where the other one was, and communicating. And maybe that's something that carried on in the game. But it's worrying that, you know, we talked about how, you know, Koscielny, when he's on it, he's great and everything, but he's a little bit quiet vocally. And Mustafi's come in and been kind of the leader and talks players through games. But he really needed to, especially tonight, talk through Chambers and Holding. And Chambers in particular, Lee Dixon was saying on our commentary that, you know, he's a confidence player. And the first sort of 10, 15 minutes, he was a bit shaky. And no one was really reassuring him or trying to talk him through the game a little bit there. So that was... that's a little bit, again, just another concern from the game on what was otherwise, you know, I mean, just as a spectacle, it was a really entertaining match. And it was, I do still think ultimately probably a fair result, but frustrating because of the same old mistakes creeping back in. And one of those weird games where, although we created a lot and we didn't take all our chances, I still felt Chelsea had a couple more. And if Morata was actually on it tonight, I mean, he could have had, what, four goals?
He's not the same player that was at Juventus right now, is he?
He was shocking tonight, wasn't he? I mean, he was like, he turned his man and he held the ball up well and everything, and clearly obviously played much better in a two, but just he's...
That first miss as well, I mean, that was... The first miss, when he put it wide, I mean, that was amateur.
That was like nearly out for a throw-in. It was that wide. But then the one right at the end as well, obviously we get to the Bellerin goal first, but that one right at the end as well was just bizarre. Funny game.
Yeah, I agree. No, I agree. Yeah, it is. I do wonder, and again, at the risk of running long, this is a debate for another show, but I do sometimes look at Arsenal as a unit and just think, Christ, what a defensive coach would do for this side. I know it's been a long-running argument, and whether you like or don't like Arsene, you know, that's something that I crave. I just think there's some players there that could be coached into really good defenders, but that's a debate for another day. Let's finish on a high then before we take some questions. So we're all kind of sat there down on our luck thinking, oh God, here we go again. You know, it's a typical sort of Arsenal smash and grab of grabbing the defeat for the jaws of victory. And then Josh, an unlikely saviour, the man who only The only man in the world with better hair than mine. We all know that's a lie. Hector Bellerin. He's taken a lot of flack from Arsenal fans recently, a lot of it unjust. A player who's clearly still finding his fitness, confidence, sort of consistency. He's not had a great time of it, but fair play to him. He's played through that. And that was, I actually, you know, when you sort of say something to yourself, when you celebrate a goal at home, whatever you say. And before Gary Neville said, I think he's a beautiful finish, absolutely beautiful finish. Word for word, I said the exact words that Gary Neville said as he said, it's a beautiful finish. Literally before he said it, I was saying it to myself. That was a finish of an accomplished footballer, wasn't it? Not just a thrash, which Mustafi had, which went very close previous to the goal, but delightful finish. And other than a last minute winner, there's no better feeling, is there, than seeing a ball hit the net when you're chasing an equaliser late on?
Yeah, I think it was the fact that a defeat for us did seem rather unjust I think it depends what your thought on the penalty is, to be fair, whether or not you think it's unjust. But personally, I thought, yeah, that we didn't deserve to lose that game at all. So it did seem rather justified for us to get that win right at the end, or the goal right at the end. The fact that we saw Theo come on, and Welbeck as well. I thought personally on the Welbeck substitution, I thought it'd be Alexis that would come off, because Alexis looked to not being able to deal with Azpilicueta anymore, because he was now coming into the game a lot more. And I thought that's what we'd be doing and Alexis would be the man to come off. But I thought it was strange that we took Lacazette off. I know you could say that every radio show. I thought it was strange we took Lacazette off at 70 minutes. But I thought particularly in this game, the only thing that denied him was the fact that I think he's had so little chances to really have a shot at goal across the time that he's really been with us, that he's just a little bit out of form. Just perhaps you're probably better off answering this on Lacazette, of whether or not he's more of a confident striker and that just needs to get a goal, really. And I think he's dipping into that. I think everything he did, you know, he tried his hardest to score, and it was only the fingertips of Cech that, and of Courtois, that really stopped that from occurring. But yeah, I think with Theo coming on for Callum Chambers, that really helped, you know, get us the ball up the pitch and someone that would offer actual width. Because the issue I have had is with our fullback, or well, our wing backs coming central. Bellerin did pop up a number of times at the kind of almost number 10 position, but I was kind of glad he did towards the 90th minute, because after he hit that, as you say, it was a beautiful finish. I think, you know, there's no player at Arsenal who cannot and does not have any technical skill with the ball and can strike a ball cleanly. I think, you know, Jace might be shouting at, I was going to say, yeah, might be shouting a certain name out. Yeah. But he's not here, so screw him.
Fuck him.
Exactly.
Cardiff bastard. Love you, Jace.
Hunting you down. But yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, you've got to be a decent footballer to play for Arsenal. And I think I've said it, that our fullbacks, especially Monreal, what a technical ability they've got. But yeah, what a strike from Bellerin. I think we've seen him do it before. I think he was hit a half volley for us last season, but rightly. And against Liverpool as well, he's hit a couple of Thunder Bastards. So we know he's got it in his locker, and it was great to see, because I think that was the only way we were beating Courtois. But it certainly looked like we were going to get a goal.
Yeah, I must admit, I never get well. You know me, I'm always positive, sad, deluded twat that I am, as John would say. But yeah, no, I was always positive. I felt like we would create another chance, and weirdly, sort of the introduction of Theo was a sort of a point where at least we had something a bit different, and arguably that's what should have happened at West Brom. But that's gone and done and dusted, fortunately. Yes, but no, fantastic and just a delightful finish. Really, really, really was a delightful finish. And fair play to Bellerin, as I say, taking a lot of stick. And he came up trumps for us. And then we went on the rampage and tried to win it late on. But obviously, a 2-2 was how it finished. And I think on the balance of play, I think it's probably taken our Arsenal hats off. Overall fair, given the sort of swing back and forth. I do just want to give a quick shout out to my latest betting failure. I was on for quite a considerable amount of money. I cashed out and cost myself quite a lot of money due to that late equaliser. So thanks, Hector. But if you could refund my bet to the tune of what I've lost, I'll give you my PayPal details later. Appreciate that. But yes, a 2-2 draw. And as I say, we come away saying fair play. I stuck a tweet out, which most people on the whole have agreed with. But before we take some questions, I'll just say all I state was I couldn't give a toss with your positive, negative, Wenger in, Wenger out. You simply can't question the heart and balls of this team, this club, this collective. Hunger, pure fight, pure desire. That's all a fan can ever ask. Maximum effort, maximum commitment. And I stand by every word of that tweet, because that's all I want from the football club I support. And yes, we could do with a little bit more of it away at West Brom and such times, not just for the big games, but that's for a rainy day. We've got some questions that are coming into the box. Is there anything either of you two wanted to bring up before we go to the questions, or are you happy for me to proceed with our lovely people?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, Greg Thomas in the chat box, get cunted, you're blocked.
Bye, Greg, love you. Don't know what he said, but I'm sure he's a bender. I can't say that, that's not very politically correct, is it?
He was offering loans for people. Yes. There you go.
Oh, is he? Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
he's
a
he can offer me.
No, he's not one of, he's not one of the Sven or, I can't remember the other brother now that's in Germany.
Lars,
he's not one of that clan.
Oh, Chris, you're going to get us in trouble with Ofcom.
Sorry, let's move on before anyone notices it's not recorded. Quick bit of breaking news. Arsene Wenger on the signing of Konstantinos Mavroplanos. That's one for Danny. I can't wait. He said after the game in the press conference, yes, it is true, but he's not ready to play for us yet. We will give him a loan. So I think that's pretty much all but confirmed that the 21-year-old centre-half is going to join off to Werder Bremen. Poor bastard, by the sounds of it. It worked for Gnabry, so, you know, we'll see. So we'll bring him back and then we'll sell him on.
Good
for a high
football to play, though. Like the league.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so. Yeah, yeah.
I assume you've seen a lot of him.
The league itself is a good league to play in competitive.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, you mentioned Christensen, John, at your...
Oh, yeah. Gladbach had actually done all right. But, yeah, he was amazing when he was at Gladbach. I was very upset when he went back to Chelsea. I said, oh, fuck. We've got defenders left.
Damn it. And they put faith in a young player, who'd have thought. But there's also some rumours swirling around a certain Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang this evening, which I don't know if we'll get time to cover. Maybe we'll save that for the podcast. Maybe, Danny, you can make a note of that. But for those of you who care, we're not going to talk transfers tonight, but Dimarzo, who's fairly well-renowned source, Gianluca Dimarzo, Italian journalist for Sky Sports, reporting that Arsenal are apparently going to try and sign Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang to replace Alexis Sanchez if the Chilean joins Manchester City this month. One issue I have with that, I don't think Alexis is going to join City this month personally. Aubameyang, hasn't exactly been the most popular figure in Germany this season. And if you're going to get out a bad egg, I'm not so sure you want to be bringing in Aubameyang. But, you know, maybe we'll cover that on the podcast. Right then, John, shall we whisk through a couple of these questions? Shall we do
them? We've got quite a few. Would you like me to fire them in? Or?
Yeah, go for it, yeah.
Yep. Okay, one for you, Josh. This is from Benny Ogadan. We clearly have shown we can step it up when we can. Why on earth did we not play like this during the weekend?
Thanks, John. It was the only... I didn't watch the game at the weekend, so I have no idea
how we played. Okay, sorry. I just read the bit afterwards. Seen the weekend's game.
We touched on it, didn't we, just then? I was just...
throughout the season.
But yeah, I'm sure it was the template of every game where we've come up against some kind of sticky defence and we've not been able to break them down. I think it's the fact of lack of space, really, and almost frustration from our own players that... To kind of break one of those teams down, you almost need to let them have the ball for a bit. You know, we've seen that, especially last season, that we've got really good results from games where we've not actually had the ball. At the moment, I'm actually listening to Raphael Honigstein's book on Jurgen Klopp, where he goes into what his defensive philosophy is. I know when you look at Liverpool and you go, defensive philosophy, Jurgen Klopp? Well, it does exist. And they're looking at kind of zonal marking, and the other way for them to create attacks is to let their opponent have the ball and win it back in those dangerous positions.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's many teams that we play that are as technically astute as us that are then going to be closed off. So you're only really thinking about the kind of, out of the top six, it's only really going to be Burnley who are going to sit back and absorb pressure. So it's that one that we not generate space for us to play in, just naturally through how they play. So I think it's a case of just surrendering position possession more often and just allowing those spaces to develop and perhaps be more patient and more, what's the word for, confident in our own defensive ability, which I know sounds like an oxymoron for Arsenal, but
that's a new one.
Yeah, I think it's the fact that, you know, the strikers we come up against or the attacking players we come up against in those smaller teams don't have the creativity or flair to create problems for us further up the field. So at least getting these teams to open up, because I think it is causing us a problem now, because I've only really seen Barcelona be able to pull a team apart when everyone's backed up. Even Man City is seeing problems with it at the moment. Look at them against Crystal Palace.
Yeah.
Didn't see that game.
I was going to say
they were so lucky.
Man City have, for the most part this season, have, I don't know, probably like 70-80% or whatever in games possession-wise, and have always found a way to break a team down. Once they get their first goal, then they just kind of run riot. And we've seen Arsenal teams do that in the past as well. Once we get the first goal, we're okay.
You think back to the Invincibles as well, in that style.
I think the one thing that we could take from the City team that they have done, although Josh is right, they did get lucky against Palace, is that they do pressure higher up the pitch. So if they turn the ball over, it's with players already out of position and they exploit it and move the ball a lot quicker than we do at times. When we play our best, we play very, very quickly.
That's the one thing, actually, formerly Noza made the point in the chat. He said, we do play very, very narrow football. I think he's bang on. And the one thing I will say in a positive to Guardiola, I know, it does happen. His style of pressing is unique. I've not seen anyone do the style of pressing. It was brilliantly highlighted by Match of the Day, which is not something I say often. I think it was Match of the Day anyway. I'm pretty sure it was. And where they highlighted the rotational pressing. So Gundogan would go, he would move to the left, then Sterling would come in, and they would all interchange the press.
Yeah.
And that keeps your players fresh, keeps the minds occupied. And that's what every crap Sunday league manager like me is desperate for, a bunch of overweight, lazy twats to do on a Sunday morning. And they sort of look at you and go, could we play 4-4-2? Because they just don't get it. For all Sunday league managers out there, I feel your pain. But if we could adapt that style and play a bit more width, then I think we would get a bit more joy. But hey-ho.
You see it in games, didn't you? That like tonight as well, Alexis was trying to get people pushing a bit higher up the pitch. And it has worked in games where we've pressed higher. Was it Man United last season or the year before when we won 3-0?
Suffocate them, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we really suffocate them. And what it was, the game Walcott was exceptional in really pressing higher through the middle. And Liverpool do it as well very successfully. You see how annoying, Firmino.
For me, it's Teeth. Yeah.
He's the right bastard, isn't he? Like, constantly chasing down defenders. Anyway, it's definitely something we can look at, because we do need to find a way through these very stodgy defensive teams. One from the Wolves and the Hedgehog for you, Chris. Even though Giroud is injured, I've been wondering if the reason we don't put crosses in is because he's always coming back to play one-touch passes through the middle practically 70% of the time.
I have to read that, because that was a very, very good question. Very nicely worded. So even there, I wonder if we really don't put crosses. Yeah. It's a hard one, isn't it? Because Giroud has his plus points, but I would argue that the strongest part of Giroud's game is not necessarily his aerial ability. He's good in the air, but I don't remember him scoring too many sort of flying headers. He got the one at Old Trafford, didn't he? And he's got a few over his career. But as the question points out quite well, he does like to play the one-touch passes or the one-touch finishes. I just don't think it's Arsene Wenger's style of football, is it? Crossing the ball in. I love nothing more than a bullet header at the back stick from an incoming centre forward. There's no better goal than when you see someone properly thump it in with a head from the back stick running in. It's just not really our style of play, is it? And I think that's probably why Giroud maybe hasn't started this season. And of course, because you've got Lacazette, he's a different type of centre forward. He's much more of an Arsene Wenger type of centre forward. But I don't know. Even I can't think. I don't know if either of you can think. I can't think back as far back as maybe John Hartson. I can't think of a centre forward we really had that was a proper aerial threat. You know, a back stick other than centre backs. You know, come and attack corners. Can you think? I can't think of a centre forward.
No, not really. The weird thing is,
Davor Suka maybe.
Yeah, Suka, like Eduardo for his size.
Eduardo,
very good in,
yeah, he was
good
very
in
good.
In
the air. Yeah, yeah.
Henri, sure. Even. I mean, he was a big player. People forget how like big that Invincible team was. Mm. You know, he was pretty big. Van Persie was good in the air as well.
Cabadia, what? No, wait.
I think Van Persie was good in the air because he was good with his elbows.
True.
There was a difference. He was very good with his elbows. Stop people getting above him.
But yeah, no, I think you're right. It's down to style. But Giroud just loves to play with his back to goal, doesn't he? And the little 1-2 flicks and getting the little flick around a defender or strengthening the centre back kind of thing. But yeah, I do think it's something we miss. But it goes back to what Josh was saying earlier, us lacking width at times, which is weird when you play with wing backs because it's the one thing you shouldn't be lacking.
For one thing I would say on him, for someone who's 6'4", he doesn't half like a driven cross along the face of goal, though.
Yeah, he does.
He scores a lot of those. He should really be 5'8" for his own sake, so people stop saying lumping the ball into him.
Oh, formerly known as but Lord Bentner, we have to give him his custom AEW Radio shout out. That header against Spurs is still one of my favourite North London goals ever. Ever.
Like 7 seconds, wasn't it?
Yeah, ran on the pitch at a corner, cunted somebody off and then twatted it in the net and ran off like he'd won the World Cup. I love that man. For all his faults. So there are many. You've got to love him for that alone. It's like the Chesney playing the piano thing. You'll always remember those moments. Right, we got quite a few more questions. So let's rattle through these as quickly as possible because they're all good questions. So, John, let's get some more in.
Right, the McManus, I'll answer this one quickly. What do you guys think of the rumours doing the rounds that Wenger could bring back Lucas Perez to the club? I think it's very unlikely. Perez doesn't really want to come back and he likes Spain. And I don't think Perez particularly likes Arsene.
No, and vice versa.
Yeah, I would I have him back? If we sold Walcott, I'd take him back for the rest of this season just because we've got so little up front in terms of options. Depends how quickly Giroud comes back, obviously. But we are a bit thin up top. But I can't see that happening. Mark, any thoughts on the supposed Greek defensive signing? We've already said about that. So that's been confirmed and he's on loan to Bremen. One from Sidhu 7549. Guys, can we pair Jack and Ainsley Maitland-Niles in our midfield? Josh, what do you think?
No, I wouldn't play Maitland-Niles in our midfield at all. I don't want him central. Stop Oxlade-Chamberlain, this guy. please, can we just play him out? He's having a good run of form on the left wing back slot. I target him at the beginning of the season to be the rotational player for Bellerin on the other side. Bellerin has been crying out for a rest in the last couple of weeks and has kind of worked through that.
He looked fucking shattered at the end of the game.
He does.
He did, didn't he? Yeah.
So why not bring in Colossal Snatch? Have him on the left and Maitland-Niles on the right. He's then on his favoured foot as well. And it just makes sense that that's where I'd be playing him at the moment. He shouldn't be playing week in, week out as a player of his age anyway. But I think he can break through rotationally at the wing-back position. And then if, you know, we go away from wing-backs and we move to a back four, either we play him there or we push him higher up and play him in the wing slots because he can play wide. I don't know why we've got an obsession of, you know, we need width. We desperately need width. But once we find a decent wide player, we want to put him inside. For God's sake, guys.
The one thing I would say, Josh, just to add to that, Gary Neville mentioned in commentary tonight, and, you know, again, as a player, I hated him, but he's a very good pundit and he knows his stuff. And he was saying that he looks like a player who's sort of out there playing with his mates. He's got oodles of confidence. He's very composed on the ball, technically very proficient. And again, you know, this is not about the manager again tonight, but he gets a lot of shit for the things he does wrong. The one thing he's always done is trust in youth and players that he really believes in that are technically good enough and can handle pressure. Ainsley Maitland-Niles has proven that, you know, he's playing on the wrong side in the wrong position and he continues to do well. And yes, he makes errors and he had his faults tonight, absolutely. But he's a very composed footballer. And I think his future is central, But I think if you look at his stature in particular now, he's not big enough to hold that role right now. You know, he looks like a child compared to Xhaka's build, for example. And even Jack, you know, look how bulky Jack is now compared to when he came through as a raw midfielder. I'd like to see him central in the long run, but I'm with you, Josh. I think at the moment, you know, his real bonus is pace. And as a wing back, his role, I think, it works brilliantly because he's very, very good on the ball and he's got a trick or two. And he pushed whoever it was back, didn't he, tonight?
Moses was back.
He was shitting himself every time, Moses, wasn't he? He didn't want to go forward for the fear of him running behind. So I think with every young player, we've got to give him time. But the signs are really encouraging. And I think, you know, we don't want to do what's happened to Iwobi, where he came in and made an impression and now everyone's slaughtering the kid. So I think we just need to bear with him with the mistakes.
I am looking forward to, in the future, when he does get to play central. I could see, you know, a 29-year-old, if Jack is at the club that long, and I hope he is, you know, 29, 30-year-old Jack Wilshere sitting there doing the PLO. Oh, I can't run anymore. My ankles are gone, but I can still pass. Ainsley, go do my running. You've got legs. You can run box to box all day for me, or, you know, with someone else alongside him. So I do think his future lies in the midfield. But yeah, like Josh says, I think the fact he hasn't played on the right yet for Bellerin is amazing. That really doesn't.
I think the width that we just go back to banging on about the width, he can put a cross in. And he could be one of those players that, yes, he doesn't play, you know, he plays out on the wing predominantly for his career, but then comes inside a bit like what we did with Santi. You know, Santi was predominantly a wing player and he had the tricks to get past a man. Well, I don't think we can utilise one of the key weapons of Maitland-Niles at the moment, his pace, centrally. It doesn't happen. Our build-up play is too slow to have pace in there. We don't need it.
And Ramsey does that job, box to box.
Exactly.
Doesn't he? Very well.
He can make some fantastic runs into the box. So we've got him and Wilshere in there. We've got Mesut Ozil for the moment, who's taking up a central location. And he can play in Maitland-Niles, who can push his fullback or push the whoever he's playing up against in there and make those cutting runs inside, and he'll get his goals from there as well. I don't doubt he'll be able to add goals to his game.
And the future midfield as well. I mean, I know we're looking at, you know, we're looking at a long way down the line, and we're looking at something that could never happen. But a midfield or an Arsenal midfield that has the talent of players like Willock, Reece Nelson and Ainsley Maitland-Niles actually quite excites me. I've got to be honest. Like, and we don't, again, we don't know what's going to happen. All three of them could be sold in 2 years' time, or they could, you know, their careers could J. Emmanuel Thomas it, you know. But the signs of those three in particular this season, when they've played in the Europa League, which has been a blessing disguise to see these players, I think they've all got really big futures. And if they progress the way that some of our youth players have, it'd be great to see some real homegrown players in that midfield long term, wouldn't it? So,
just to wrap up on that quickly, the thing with Maitland-Niles is there's a real possibility of perhaps seeing him in midfield next season, because if Ozil does leave as well, along with Alexis, and depending on who we bring in, you know, Xhaka, you would think he's going to keep his place, and Ramsey's going to play most games, and it will be Jack coming in as well. And at some point, those guys are going to need a rest, and he'd be one of the prime people to come in and play in the middle there. Yeah, we shall see. But yeah, like Josh says, for now, he's playing very well out of position. And I enjoy watching him play every time he's got the ball. I'm really impressed by him.
Yeah.
Right, a couple more to fire through. Schwinn like a gunman. Rob Holding was great today, aggressive and decisive. Is this finally an indication that he'll play more in the Premier League? Chris?
I slightly disagree. I thought he was good overall because he had some sticky moments tonight. And I think that's only natural. Once again, he's a player who's come from Bolton, you know, a club that was at the time League One, I think I'm right in saying, Josh, when he signed. He's a raw talent. He proved in that cup final how good he can be. And I think he will continue to progress. But again, we need to give him time. And I think there were some of his flaws were exposed tonight, as indeed were Chambers at times. I think those two are potentially the future.
And Mustafi's.
And Mustafi's, yeah, agreed. I think having someone like Per Mertesacker as a coach will benefit both, experience as much as anything else. Other people forget as well, Lauren Koscielny might be a first team player and a captain at the moment. He also trains with these kids every day, and I think that will improve them hugely as well. And again, carping back to my earlier point, I'd love to see him work with a proper defensive coach. You know, whether that's Steve Bold or Martin Keown or someone else coming in, it'd be great. But I think Rob Holding will come good, and he's a very level-headed guy. And I thought, yeah, there were positives and negatives tonight. And I think the fact that he's, you know, he's coming out of the cold, having not even been on the bench the past few weeks, but he played tonight and he did his job as best he could. And again, he's one that we just have to stick by. It'll come good. But I love his passion, his drive for the game, and to step up from Bolton to this level, you know, a la Gary Cahill, credit where credit's due. £2 million, I mean, it's a bargain.
He's no nonsense as well, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, I love
what you get from him. And the fact that
he's Peter Kay-esque, isn't he? Yeah.
Wasn't it Steve on the pod that was saying that the problem with most of our defenders, they don't just clear their lines. You don't get that with Rob Holding. Yeah. If he needs to get rid, he's getting rid.
Yeah. Chambers as well, to a degree, isn't it?
Yeah, Chambers learnt that, I think, from Karanka last season at Middlesbrough. You need to clear your lines. And I think the only other one you've got in there is Mustafi, who can ping a long ball if needed. So, you know, at least if he's going to kick it long, he's going to put something on it and try and create. Mm. But yeah, I think it was quite good to see. And that's what I quite enjoyed from seeing those two boys at the back, was the fact that you knew they'd clear their lines if needed.
Mm.
Right, a few more, and we will try all not to cough at the shit out of them. That's not just at you, Chris, it's all of us.
This is what happens when I come back, isn't it?
We just have this effect, it just spreads. Neil Vagela, do we need a midfielder this window or a defender?
Both.
Yeah, if we can get both, I'd take both. I'm not as convinced we need a defender.
Just
because...
Do we dare stir the pot, John, about what we may or may not have been discussing earlier? Do we stir the pot here, or should we?
Go on. Stir the pot. Stir the pot. Do it. Can we?
Do it. Okay. It, we'll stir the pot a little bit. There are some reports in France, and I can see everyone in the chat box now going, oh, here he goes again. There are some reports from some very well-connected people whom I interact with on a regular basis in private via Snapchat Premium. That suggests a certain gentleman with very large hair who's currently out of favour from tonight's opposition has been spoken to at length by Arsenal officials twice in the last 2 months. Now, it doesn't mean that's going to happen at all, but from what I can gather, there's been discussions about a potential loan deal. Would Chelsea be open to it? If you don't know who I'm talking about, it's David Luiz. So in theory, John, if that was to happen, I think a lot of people would probably go, oh my God, what are we doing? But we've got history, Galas, Lassana Diarra. We've got history of doing that sort of job. The one thing that signing David Luiz would do, as well as cause the heart rate to increase even further, is you do potentially get two players in one, in that he can play centre-back and can also revert into sort of a holding midfield role.
Yeah.
Even though he thinks he's Beckenbauer and he's probably closer to Beckham Jr. But he has got the ability to lead as well as fuck things up, but then that's what we've got already. So hypothetically, you can answer me, would you be a fan of that deal if it was something we pursued?
I'd take him. If it's just a loan to the end of the season, I don't see why not. Chelsea, I know some people say, you know, Chelsea won't do deals. They will. They're quite willing to deal with other clubs if the money's right. They would have, the Demba Ba deal, the only reason that didn't go through was because Mourinho stopped it. Everyone else at Chelsea was fine with it.
He's not even on the bench, is he, at Chelsea at the moment?
Conte doesn't do any of that stuff at Chelsea. It's nothing to do with him. He just coaches the team. He just says, you know, I want these players, I want those players. So, yeah, I'd have him. I know he's got his faults. How many defenders have we got that have got faults already? So I think he's a good player. Yeah. He's got lots of high-level experience. You know, Koscielny's struggling with injury. Monreal, when he comes back, how fit is he going to be? I don't know. He can play in a variety of positions. I think if he's alone, it makes sense. I don't really see the issue with it. I know some people don't like him, but yeah, I like him. And also, if we play Tottenham, he's bound to like try and break Dele Alli.
Yeah, the shithousery, as you said earlier. Oh, yeah, we should say actually for the record, he's currently injured. I'm doing the finger thing there. But it's very clear, John, you know from your Italian football knowledge, Conte is not a manager to be fucked with. If you're not keen, you're not keen. Michy Batshuayi is another one to ask about that. If you're not liked by Conte, you won't play. Simple as that. And however much Chelsea might like David Luiz. And as I say, we're not starting rumours. I can only tell you what I I heard what I've been told doesn't mean that Arsene is going to trot him out tomorrow as a new signing. It's just an avenue we've looked at. So
I'm sure there's tons of players that we've spoken to and had links with, and if something falls into place or Arsene says, you know what, yeah, let's go for it. It's just getting stuff prepared and whatever and in position. I do think a midfielder would probably be more important, but yeah, David Luiz fills both roles. So
yeah,
and the only issue we're getting David Luiz in is, you know, at some point during training, Mesut Ozil's going to nutmeg him and he'll get a Vietnam flashback to Brazil 7-1 and just cry in the corner and never be able to use him again.
That is true. We've only really got time for two more. I want to make a very quick point on Mesut in a second. I can answer the Lacazette one if you want me to quickly, and then you can pick the best.
JHQ, what style of play at Arsenal would suit Lacazette best? 4-4-2 ? Or, you know, suggestions. So to go on too long, Chris. Go on.
Yeah, I'll keep this brief. Basically, at Lyon, in the best formation they had available to him at the time, it was a 4-3-3. He formed a, as you probably will be aware, a lethal partnership with Nabil Fekir on one side. Max Cornet was mostly the other player on the opposite side, with Lacazette through the middle. I tweeted this the other day. If you're that interested or care at all, go through my timeline. You'll see a couple of tweets I posted about Lacazette. Do not worry about Lacazette. It will come. His movement is exceptional. He works his ass off. His attitude is fantastic. He will get a lot of goals for Arsenal. Arsene is clearly, you know, mindful of his confidence. I know a lot of people made a big song and dance of him throwing his gloves on the other day. He's a goal scorer. Goals are his business. He's frustrated like anybody would be. He will come good. I think if Alexis leaves, you'll actually see a different Lacazette as well, because I think he'll be given more of a creative license to link with Ozil, and there won't be that additional issue of Alexis coming in and sort of, you know, running around all over the place. There'll just be the Ozil-Lacazette partnership potentially. I do think we need to buy probably two high-caliber midfielders, one wide and one deep-line playmaker. Yes, Fekir would be lovely, thank you, to accommodate Lacazette. But don't worry about him. 4-4-2, not really sure that would work, because we tried it with France with Giroud and it doesn't really work. Maybe in a 4-4-2 if you had a Griezmann-type style, but we're not going to sign him. So, no, Lacazette will come good. He'll be absolutely fine. He needs one to go in off his ass at the moment for a bit of confidence. I'd back him to score. I actually think he might play him against Forest, and I'd back him to score if he does. That said, we might get Walcott Welbeck, I don't know, but he'll come good, he'll be fine. And he's a very, very good centre forward. And as many people mentioned in the chat earlier on, our supply line is what we need to work on, not Lacazette himself.
Yeah, I had some criticisms of some games this season, but I think he's done really well overall. And it is just more the players around him.
And he loves it at Arsenal, by the way. He's very, very happy at Arsenal, trust me on that one.
So we've got time for one more question, and it's a hypothetical one, or hypothetical theoretical, I don't know. Charlie Davis. Was that Theo's final appearance for the club? So I'll let you both have a go. Josh, what do you think?
Oh, to be honest, I wasn't really expecting to see him at all.
Neither was he.
Yeah, exactly. I think he was a bit shocked by the fact he had to come on, but... perhaps, I think, I don't know, I really like Theo Walcott and I'd like to keep him in the squad. The only issue is that, you know, we don't play a formation that really benefits him. I think, you know, other clubs can deal with having such a player on even more money than Theo Walcott that barely gets a look in. Just looking at Liverpool and Daniel Sturridge, who is on considerably more money than Theo Walcott per week as a basic wage, but you know, agendas are agendas. But yeah, Theo Walcott, I would like to see him there, but you know, he does need to get games. And if he sees that away from Arsenal, then so be it. And if we're not going to play with width and not going to look to revert to proper wide players, then I think if we do need to do it, then perhaps we've got Maitland-Niles who can come in as an auxiliary winger. And that does mean that we can, you know, get Theo out there. But, you know, I do like Theo. He's not on 140k a week. That's the only thing I would say as a final piece. But yeah, he's not on that money.
Chris, what do you reckon?
Short for me, mate. No, I think he's gone. I actually, in a weird way, I'd actually like to see Theo Walcott move on because, you know, he's a nice bloke. He's a likeable bloke. And I know that's not why you sign footballers, but, you know, he's still, what's he, 29? You know, there's still goals in those legs. I'd like to see him go back to Southampton. I think it'd be a nice homecoming. And I'd like to see him go back to Southampton because I'm very worried about Ross's mental health at the moment. And I do love Ross. I don't think Ross can continue watching Southampton if they don't score some fucking goals. So I'd like to see Theo go back and be unleashed through the middle. Obviously not against us, but he deserves a career. I don't think there's enough room in a club the size of Arsenal for two, for Theo Walcott and Danny Welbeck. I think they both, they both offer something. But yeah, it'd be nice to see Theo get a bit of a career. And don't forget, he wasn't. You know, it wasn't his fault he was selected for the World Cup without playing a game. You know, there's a lot of pressure on him at a young age. It hasn't worked out. We probably haven't utilised him the right way. But I wish him the best. There'll be no ill feeling from me, unlike Alex Oxlade-Down tools. So, move him on. So now I'm fine with that. I presume you think he's gone as well, John, for the record.
I assume so. Like Josh, I didn't think he... I think he was thrown on tonight as Wenger's, like, frustration that we didn't win the game. That clearly from his press conference he felt that way, because I don't think otherwise he would have wanted to bring him on for risk of getting injured or anything. I am weirdly torn about selling him though now. Like, I think selling him is the right decision, but I do also think if you sell him, I know he hasn't been used much, but that limits our options up front even more, and wide as well. So yeah, it's a little bit scary because the list of the numbers of players that we need to get in over whether we do anything in January and obviously definitely in the summer just gets bigger and bigger.
I've got a little inkling that if you let Theo Walcott go, which it seems like we will, I've got a little inkling that we will let him go if we've got something in the background to replace. I'm not saying that'll be a superstar. I'm not talking like a Draxler or anything like that. But I think there's a possibility that maybe a loan type of deal.
I just think it leaves us a little bit short up front. I know Wenger has been very reluctant to use him this season, but
there's a little bit of talk about Paul George and Tepp, who's in Germany Wolfsburg. There's a little bit of talk around him. Not so sure that would happen, but you know he's French and Arsene knows him. So, I think you'd have to get somebody, even if it was a young player that you think could just come in. And I don't think it'll be Zaha either. I just can't see that. So, yeah. I don't think so.
Best we can deal with in January, I think, is loan deals. There's not many players in a World Cup year that are going to look to jump ship properly. And also the fact that we've brought in a brand new scouting department, more or less, that's going to need time to bed in. I'm assuming the Greek chap, who I think we'll refer to him from now on.
Can we call him Greek Danny? Just for the...
Greek Danny. Yeah, Greek Danny. The Greek Danny. I think he is one of the first that have come, you know, from that list.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what you kind of expect the signings that we'll get out of him. Are those kind of, rough diamonds. Who's big, but...
As well as some big, I think there are bigger targets as well as, I don't think we're going to be, I think, and I'll put my head on the block here, under Sven Mislintat, if he is, if he's given the creative license that we hope he is, Arsene, I get the impression that he will be dealing in very top level signings and future development signings. I don't think we'll be going for, again, bless him, I don't think we'll be in the El Nene market as much under Mislintat. I think it will be top area or prospects. I don't think there'll be mid-range signings. Even a Welbeck, I don't think we'll be in that market anymore. Whether that pays off, time will tell. But yeah, that's the impression I get anyway, hopefully. Okay, I've got just two final points to make and then we'll wrap this up because we have gone very, very long. Sorry, Dan. See, Danny's already given me shit. Danny, come on. It's been fun. It's been a while since I've done this. Just to address Metal Domain, because he kept asking, so it's unfair for me not to mention him. He said, what about Lamar and Nzonzi? Nzonzi, I don't think will happen now because Sevilla have changed their coach. Lamar, let's put it this way, there are still very much things going on that deal. So I wouldn't rule it out.
Some journalists.
I don't believe that. Thank you, Steve, for that comment, by the way. Full Carpenter, love it. Yeah, and the final point I wanted to make was just briefly about Mezzet. Talk to our good friend, Mr. Neil Robbins, Deputy Fanny, underneath Chief Fanny Dom and Head Fanny Simon. You know him well as well, John. He's very well versed in the Mezzet Özil sort of stories and whatnot, isn't he? Chimp the Gooner? Is that his Twitter? Go and hassle him.
Chimp Gooner, yeah, I think so, yeah.
Chimp Gooner. Neil knows a few bits and bobs, tidbits, and I tend to agree with him. I think Mesut Ozil's future hinges an awful lot on marketing and image rights. I think that's got a huge part to play. And Neil has a suspicion that Jack Wilshere might change shirt numbers at the end of the season if he signs a new deal. And if that happens, a certain M10 might be able to have creative license to be number 10 at Arsenal, and therefore could potentially sell merchandise via the club and market himself via the club and charge the club a lot more money for his contract. So I wonder if there's something in that. That's the only thing I wanted to add to that story. I just think there's something in this, and I think Mesut, to be fair to him and his legal team and whoever's dealing with him, I think they're playing a very clever hand here. They haven't gone full Alexis, have they? They've been very careful and very well spoken about the
his
club.
Twitter is at Chimp Baguna.
Yes, yeah. That's he's a lovely bloke, Neil. We hope to have him on the pod again soon when he's free. So give him a follow if you haven't already. Right, that's it. I promise. That's all I wanted to say. Thank you, everyone who's been watching this evening. 186 of you are still watching. And thank you very, very much for joining us this evening and for all. I think we had 260 at some point. Amazing numbers. So thank you very much. Thank you as well to everybody who's contributed in the chat box throughout the evening. 83 thumbs up, one thumbs down. I bet that was Danny who sat on the keyboard or something. But yeah, if you do like what we do, give us a thumbs up. You can give us a rating on iTunes if you want to, review, tweet the podcast, or just send pictures of turds to Danny or plug sockets. With the switch on. Danny loves those. Or spiders. He's a big fan of spiders, I hear. So do tweet him at @_GFP. Right. Thank you very much, Josh. Much appreciated for you coming on this evening.
Thank you very much, Chris. This is like the second or third pod in a row that I've been on that's been bemoaned for going on for a bit.
Ah, oh, it's fine. I'll take the rap for this. Danny, love you. John, thank you very much for pressing the buttons, doing the hosting-y bits, and indeed for covering my ass several times this season already, because I haven't thanked you publicly. So thank you.
That's quite all right, Chris.
And if you like what particularly Josh and I do, or indeed John in the background, if you like another little podcast, free plug, Football Hipsters podcast. Me and Josh are the kind of two of the key components of that. If you like talking football in general, you can look us up and listen to the stuff we do as well. We're coming back in a week's time, hopefully. So at the FH podcast, if you like stuff like that as well. But until the podcast returns on, it's tomorrow, isn't it?
Crikey. Tomorrow, live, another live one.
So there you go.
So you can watch live.
You can watch Spurs lose spectacularly at home to the Andy Carroll fueled West Ham whilst watching Danny pick his bum hole and Gimli cunt everybody off. So what more could you want from a Thursday evening? Yes, tune in for that. Who else is on? Steve? Is it Steve?
And I think the Rev's on. I think Raj is on.
Raj.
I've got the text from Danny, which needs to reply to my one as well. Gimli, Danny with Carl, Raj and Steve.
Fantastic. Okay, nice. Steve and Raj and Carl interacting sounds like audio sex. That's a perfect way to leave it. So thank you very, very much for tuning in. Really appreciate it. Thank you to those of you that have given me some kind words and said you've missed me. I'm sure having listened to me rang on for all these hours, you won't be tweeting me that again. But thank you very much, nevertheless. Thank you, John and Josh. Thank you, Danny, as always, for giving us the platform at the AFC podcast. We'll speak to you tomorrow on the live podcast. Up the Arsenal, keep it red. We are out of here.